Hey everybody, and welcome to the show. I'm James, that's Katie, and that makes this the first ever episode 22 of Cloud Control, the gaming podcast that's not just good, it's good enough. And Kate, you know what? Everyone, it's NHL playoff time. The Stars are in the playoffs. We're cheering for them as a podcast community. And these guys are out here sacrificing their bodies. They're blocking shots. They're taking hits. And they're doing everything they can to win. And I just want you to know, Kate, that's what I'm doing on the podcast here today, because I'm dealing with a bit of a headache today at this time. And I'm still here to show up to record this today. So I just want you to know I'm battling out there just like my Stars. And, you know, we're going to get through this together.
Yeah, that's a sacrifice. Someone say that's like, you know, you got the true athlete spirit. You got your, what did 2K Sports say? You got your head in the game. we are ready to have a podcast.
We're ready to have a podcast. That's right. If they can go do that amazing physical toll on their bodies, I can stand here for an hour and change and chat about some video games that I sat on the couch and played earlier today. So it'll be just fine, everybody. Don't worry. Okay. Well, let's get right into it then. Today's show, we're going to talk about I beat Resident Evil 4, everybody. This is exciting. Kate's got another game to talk about too. And then at the end of the show, we're going to point out some of our favorite stuff from the latest Nintendo Indie World, because we always like to go through all the presentations. And there was like, what you say, 23 games announced at the Indie World? That's quite a few. It was only 20 minutes long.
Yeah, that's like one game a minute. I think it's 23, with one being like a remaster, and then somewhere like DLCs or like updates and stuff. But yeah, I think 23 announcements, which is great.
Cool. All right. Well, we'll get to that at the end of the show. So we'll look forward to that when we get to it. Let's start off. I beat Resident Evil 4, everybody. And I spoke about this on the show last time, and I was really high on it when I played last time. You know, I didn't have too much going on. I want to report, first of all, number one thing off the bat, I said last time there was an audio glitch with my game, and then Kate so inspiringly pointed out that maybe I just had the mic down on my controller, and it turns out that was the problem, and there was no glitch. I just had the mic down, and I feel like a total idiot because we always talk about how cool the DualSense is, and I don't know what happened. I think I just must have been playing something where I didn't like what came out of the controller and turned it off, and I just forgot. So that's on me. There's no glitch. And it was great. You know, once I had that on for the back half of the game, really enjoyed it, everybody. Sound effects were awesome.
Does that make it scarier? I feel like it would be even scarier with sound. Like, because I always think of Demon Souls when I think of that. Maybe just the first game I played on my PlayStation. But like, in that game, like, your footsteps came out of the controller, so it really felt like it was like sound coming from you. So I feel like in a horror game, that could potentially be so terrifying to have the sound like it's right behind you instead of like, you know, from your TV.
You would think so, but the thing is, the game only uses it for those kind of comms communications, or when you reload your gun, the sound kind of comes out of there, and that sounds really awesome, I will say, but it doesn't use it for like the atmosphere, like anything scary. So yeah,
I will say that gives me a little bit of stress off my back, because that sounds cool and immersive, but I actually don't want to be terrified.
exactly. Wonderful. Yeah. And you know, I would say maybe that's a good place to start off with what I want to say about this game, is that just the feeling that this game had. Now, I was saying last time, like, I think this is going to rank pretty high up my list, and I was just working on my top 50 games list, and this game did rank really high, and I know I'm like really soon after finishing it, but just this game just feels good. I just love the way that this game made me feel as the player throughout, and I think that if you're looking for like a really scary horror game, this probably isn't what you're looking for. Like, it definitely is creepy and has like a lot of, you know, really crazy cult stuff and like dismembered bodies and like all that. Like, you'll definitely see some scary stuff, but more than that, like, I just think the game is like got this great mix of like, it's horror, but it's so silly, and there's like a good amount of action, and it's just this amazing package. And coming out of it as the player, I just feel like, you know, it's just paced so perfectly, and you get through this scary part, and then you're like, wow, I can't believe I killed all those guys. I feel so good about myself. I'm just kind of scraping by with these few bullets. And then all of a sudden you're in this next section where you've got tons of ammo and you're just killing a bunch of guys, and it's not scary at all. It's like an arena fight. And then all of a sudden you're through the next door, and you're like flashlight out through this cobweb filled, you know, staircase. And it's just like this excellent pacing throughout. And you just, like, I just couldn't wait to see what was next. I can't believe how fast I got through the game, considering, going back to relating what I was saying last time about my experience with Resident Evil 2, which was a game that I feel like I was so slow and scared and, like, you know, really got stuck in it in that way because I was almost, like, apprehensive. But this game just drags you through it at this perfect clip. And, you know, the last thing, I guess, I don't know if you have any questions about that, but, like, the way that it goes, it's, like, scarier at the start, you know, like a good horror movie, scary at the start. But once you know what the monster is or what the threat is, typically it's, like, a little less scary. And that game, this game, sorry, takes advantage of that so well, because as you get more used to, like, these are the zombies, these are the creatures, the last, like, kind of couple hours of the game are, like, very action focused, and it just works so well. Yeah, love it.
That's awesome. So yeah, you become a lot more capable. So I'm assuming it's a very clear answer here then, but I would say you prefer this kind of, like, campy, funny action horror versus the more, like, in kind of, like, intense, somber that 2 has got going on.
Yeah, I think it's more than that. I think it's also, like, the pacing of, like, the action as well. Like, in 2, you're definitely, or I felt more restricted in terms of, like, you really have to be careful about your bullets and, like, oh my God, like, the enemies are respawning in this room that I have to go back to. So, like, I've got to make sure I'm equipped to go and deal with them again. Whereas in this game, once you've cleared an area out for the most part, like, it's kind of, it maintains that like safeness. So you don't have to worry about, like, you know, backtracking if you forgot to pick up something, or if you see, like, oh, there's a, you know, pack of ammo I forgot back there, or a treasure, like, I can go back and get that safely. So that's, like, makes you, like, you can sprint and it'll be safe, right? Like, it's like you've cleared it out. Whereas another game, you're still sneaking around. Just makes it a lot more approachable, I think. But yeah, that was great. Boss fights, fantastic stuff. You know, there's not too many of them, but they're kind of sprinkled at nice little places throughout the game. They're all creepy and interesting you know, really fit the tone of the game. I think the bosses, like, the story of this game overall is, like, it's not really that intense, you know, like, there's some narrative, there's some dialogue, but it's not like The Last of Us or God of War, or these games that are really story focused. Like, the story is really just the reason to move you from the next point to the next point, to get you to travel and see what the crazy things that you're going to experience on the way are. But the bosses themselves, like, they are really creepy and disgusting people, and, like, you know, they're creatures that come out and they have weak points, and they all have kind of their own trick to them and interesting arenas you kind of have to move around. So those were fun. And I think they really test your weaponry as well. Like, I had a few really specific strategies that I had used on a couple of these bosses. Like, okay, I've got my rifle here. It's got this long range scope. I can use it at the start of this battle to, like, pick off these things in the distance, or, like, hit this boss's weak point. But if I didn't have that rifle, like, to do that kind of damage, you'd have to play it a lot differently. So, like, I was talking to a friend of mine that had also been playing the game, who liked to use a lot of different weapons, or, like, for one of the bosses, I had a rocket launcher, which does, you know, a ton of damage. They didn't have it. So it's like, well, what did that fight look like for you? Pretty interesting, considering, you know, you wouldn't expect this game to have a lot of variety in how you would tackle situations, but it's a lot more flexible than I think you would anticipate on first glance, which is good, because the way the game is set up too is, now that I finished it, at the end of the game, it kind of gives you, like, a rating on, like, I got a B, I think, overall for how well I did in the game. And it gives you a rating, it gives you, like, a timestamp, it gives you, like, your accuracy, your score, because it's really set up, I think, for people that want to do, like, multiple run-throughs or play New Game Plus. And so you can kind of, like, go for that improvement on your run. And at the same time, you might want to try, like, a different weapon set, or try, like, you know, some different attachments for your guns, or leveling up different things. So it's got the replay factor. I don't know if I'll personally go for that right now. Like, you know, we're not typically the type to do it, but it's just cool they put that kind of level of extras in it as well.
That's interesting, because I think it's, like, definitely one of those games, I think the average person is going to play it more for, like, the spectacle of, like, going through all the set pieces and seeing all the bosses and all, like, the crazy monsters you end up fighting. Because I think it's definitely one of those series that's known for just sort of, like, you know, like, almost, like, one-upping itself in terms of, like, what kind of weird, crazy shit am I going to run into, like, around this corner. But yeah, there is an interesting level of, like, I want to say like RPG mechanics, but kind of is with like the different guns and like all the different upgrades that you can put on them. And like there is an amount of customization in the game that is surprising based on like what you would assume at a first glance if you've never played a Resident Evil game. Like I remember that surprising me with Village a lot, of being like, oh, I don't just like, this isn't just my pistol, it's the pistol, but like I go to the bench and here's like 20 things I can do to the pistol to change it, or I just cannot use it at all and use something else. And like I was surprised at that, because typically horror games you are like very restricted in terms of like, here's the, you know, the gun that has a lot of ammo that you're going to use that sucks most of the time, and then save your two like good shotgun bullets for when you really need them, you idiot. Like
I started using a magnum near the end of the game and it was just a weapon type that I'd never really put any time into, but I was carrying a weapon that I just hadn't really been able to use a lot. And I was like, oh, screw it. So I just sold it and like bought a magnum. And then I bought this thing and I'm like, oh my God, I should have been using this the whole time. It's just like, bam, like one shot does so much damage. It was fantastic.
I feel like that was the game in Village that I liked the most, if I remember correctly, was the magnum.
Yeah. But like the loadouts really do make a lot of difference too. And something I really want to emphasize about this game is just how, as you go through, and I've played some of the sections a couple times, you know, from dying or whatever, that I just think the level design in this game is so immaculate. It is, you know, I think it's on a level with the best kind of action games that we've seen, like whether we talk about The Last of Us, or I know, I don't know if Souls is a good comparison, just because they're so open and like the way that the maps kind of connect is a little different than something like this. But I think it's just so smart in the way that it leads you around, and like, you know, you'll go through a passageway and there'll be a locked door, but later once you get to the next objective, it'll like conveniently open to take you exactly back to where you need. Or like on a different level too, like we were talking about last time, there's the bell you can shoot and like ring to take advantage of that situation. There's been so many times where I've, you know, entered, there's some kind of, you know, I'd say four or five big sections where you're in kind of quite a large combat arena in this game with like multiple levels. And there's like, you know, you can really go to the top, and if you have a rifle, you can kind of scope down, or like, you know, you can sneak through little tunnels or over bridges. There's like a lot of variety. And I've just noticed like when you take your time and sort of really observe your surroundings in this game, and especially if you have a scope on one of your weapons, you can kind of look around and be like, okay, well, I can shoot that explosive thing up there and that'll take out those two snipers. And then there's the guy with the rocket launcher. I know he's over there. So if I just get over to this bridge, I can see him and shoot him in the head before he, like, they all notice where I am. And you can kind of manipulate the situation like that in this game. Or like, you know, as you get, there's certain other things placed in different areas where once you know they're there, you can make something that seems really hard at first. You can kind of sneak around and go like the back way and all of a sudden kill like three people from behind through stealth, and it makes it way easier. But it's just that familiarity you get as you continue to play. I just think it's so smart, and I can totally see how like on a second playthrough, I would be instantly so much faster through the game, or like know what I'm doing just because of that like the way that you get to learn how to control like these situations to your favor, which I love.
I think whenever I hear anyone describe something like that, it really like shows to me that like linear games are good, and like they like sometimes that can be such a benefit, because like you can be intentional about knowing how a player like has to approach an area or a situation. Like, you know, they're coming from this door, you know exactly like how you can plan out what's going to be inside it. And like linear doesn't mean that the player doesn't have agency, or that you don't make a lot of like critical decisions on the fly, or that you can't approach a situation in like a lot of different ways. It just means that like, you know, you're going through it in a certain set order, and that things can be like tailored to know like, okay, enemy placement's exactly where this is because like you have to approach it from this angle. But then once you're in the situation, there's tons of little like micro adjustments that can happen. And like, there's so many different ways it plays out based on what you do, like what gear you have. And like, I just think that this sounds like such a thoughtful, like meticulous, like to detail kind of like construction of a world, right? Like if it's down to like, you know, it's so seamless, like where each enemy is placed with thought and care. It isn't just like, oh, we need like, you know, 10 dogs to be in this area because you got to fight dogs here.
Like, yeah, 100%. So, and like one of the
best. It's such a glowing recommendation for a game.
It is. And I want to just highlight kind of like one of my favorite levels of the game is the last thing I talk about. Just because I think it's so smart and it really illustrates what you're saying. There's this area called the Clock Tower. It's maybe halfway through the game. And it's my favorite area that I went through, obviously. I went through all the areas, but it's kind of like you're at one point you're kind of climbing up this clock tower and it's got this sort of spiral staircase. And so in the center, there's like this spinning flamethrower thing. And so you have to like time when you're running around the outside with like not getting burned, basically. Mm-hmm. But then to add on to it, as you kind of get, you know, partway through, they also start rolling. There's this asshole at the top of the thing and he's pulling this lever and these giant spiky Indiana Jones type balls start rolling down the stairs. So you have to avoid both of these obstacles at once. And there's also like enemies on, you know, all the way up the stairs as well, trying to fight you. And so there's like every once in a while, there's these little pull offs you can kind of, you know, squeeze into. Mm-hmm. You can avoid the ball or like get out of the way of the fire and whatnot. And so I died there, you know, a couple of times, just kind of getting the timing down. But once I got to know it, you know, I didn't even fight the enemies. I kind of just led them into the obstacles. And then once you like get a certain amount of way up the, you know, you can lead them back into the fire. They'll all run into it because they're stupid zombies and I can avoid it. So you fight your way up. You finally get to the top. And then I take out the guy on the lever and I'm like, okay, finally, now I can like go back and get a few treasure boxes that were along the way that I didn't have time to open while he was rolling these things at me. So I go back, I'm like opening, I'm looting a few things that I found, and I notice at the bottom of the stairs, there's like more guys running up, and I think to myself, okay, instead of waiting to fight these guys, I'm just going to go up and I'm going to pull that lever. So now I start rolling these balls down at the enemies, and I'm like totally able to defend myself just using the stage while I'm busy picking up all these things and like arranging my stuff and just figuring out what I want to do. And I just thought that was like, it's not the most ingenious thing to think of to go and use that, but I just think it's so cool that the game is clearly like wanting you to do that. And it, even though like, it's not like it didn't take a genius to figure it out. Like it just feels like it's so good to get that kind of one up on a game where you're like, haha, like it's mine now. Like I've done this.
Yeah,
and I love that feeling.
That sounds incredible. Like, yeah, like it's not like the most complex, it's not like you do some like complex geometry to figure that out, but like, it does feel so satisfying when there's like something in the game like that. And like realistically, like if he was pulling the lever for boulders, like why couldn't you? But a lot of games wouldn't let you have that.
It would just be an inactive lever, right? Like you don't have, you wouldn't do anything. Yeah,
exactly. A lot of games, it's like, oh, that's just like an obstacle that you overcame and like now you're done with that puzzle. But like it is so incredibly satisfying when there's that like internal logic to a game where it's like, well, maybe I'm gonna do it, and then it actually works. Like even if you kind of expect it to work, I still feel like it's always like got a little bit of a surprise that it actually does, and then you're just delighted.
Yeah, exactly. That's awesome. Exactly. So yeah, I don't know what else I can say. Like, I guess you could nitpick here and there. I would have loved a little bit of better checkpointing at certain places. I do find, like we were talking last time, like it's sort of endearing how they held on to some of the stuff from the first version. Like this, the cheesy, corny, like nothing dialogue is funny. Although I wish Ashley had a little bit more agency. She's just like a helpless woman in this game, and it's totally like, I'm Leon, I'm a guy, I'll help you. You know, I'm
wearing my sport sunglasses.
I got Ashley a pair of glasses too. Actually, I want to let you know. Halfway through, I unlocked this like red pair of Ray-Bans. She looked hilarious as well.
Nice.
there's those things. I do feel like the checkpointing could have been, I don't know if it was like the same checkpoints as in the first game or whatnot, but there was a couple sections where, you know, I went through the better part of 20 minutes of like taking all these people out systematically in an area, and then like I died at the end to something stupid and had to go back. I just feel like we could have done better there. Like it's, and especially in a horror game too, because once you've gone around and you've seen like what's in the room, you know, like it's not scary anymore. It's just meticulous and it's not great. So, I mean, could that be improved? Sure, but this game really can't be improved in too many spots, honestly. Like, it is great. You have to play it at some point. That's all I can say.
I am so interested in playing this game. Like, it is bumped high up my list. So definitely, like, this will not be the last we hear Resident Evil 4, because at some point in the near future, I'm sure I'll be talking about it. I have one more question for you before we move on, and that is, aside from Ashley as a character, like, what did you think of her mechanically as, like, a character that you need to protect? Mm. Because, like, this game sometimes gets, like, joked on as, like, oh, it's the ultimate, like, what's the word?
Escort mission.
Yeah, it's the ultimate escort mission, because it's the whole game. So, like, was Ashley, like, was that kind of annoying at times, or does it actually work pretty well with being able to command her where to go, or like, you know, how much like in peril is she at all times?
Yeah, there's, you know, like, it's interesting when she's with you, like, as a companion, and you can kind of do the, like, follow me close or stay back kind of thing. I really had almost no issue keeping her safe at any time, because I just felt like I kept her close to me, and I got, like, really good. I felt at my positioning where I'd always be, like, in a good spot, and she was so close to me that it didn't really matter, as long as I was smart about, like, taking out the right enemies. The parts that made it, that were harder, was there's a few parts where, like, she has to like unlock a door or something and you have to defend her in one spot, or like she's in she's like holding a, there's some doors where like you have to hold a lever and like if you let go it'll close, so she has to stand there and hold it open while you go and like do something. And like while she's there, oftentimes like while she's a stationary target that has to stay in one spot, it can be a pain in the ass because they'll come and try and get her while you're off like trying to do something in the other part of the room, so you're kind of like going back and forth. That's a bit of a pain, and those were probably some of my least favorite encounters, but it's honestly not that much, and there's, you get kind of separated from her and brought back, and then, you know, like, it's not often you have to deal with it, so I would say that if there was more of it, I might have not liked it, but I think for the amount that it's in there, it's fine.
Okay, that's fair, and I think even for the sections, like, the sections where you command her, she's close to you, like, do you think it kind of almost, like, is a benefit because it adds like an extra tension of like something you have to worry about during combat? Like I could see that maybe being a positive.
Definitely. I like the way they did it because you're not like, what I hate about those kind of missions in other games is like the second you get into a combat, you're like, oh my God, this person is so fucked. Like all I have to do is watch them and like, they're like my main priority. In this game, like I feel as though the zombies are still overall more concerned with you. Because they're coming for you overall, and that it just happens if like some of them will go for her, but I don't know, they just didn't seem to down her that often. And then when she does get down, it gets tense though, because if she gets hit again when she's down, it's game over for you. Like she doesn't have a health bar or something, she just has like two kind of hits, I guess, and so that can cause some stress. But yeah, no, overall it's like not annoying. I wouldn't complain about it a bit, really. I would complain more about her the way she's characterized. You know, that to me is not great, but yeah, the mechanic's fine.
Okay, awesome. Then you have answered all my questions very satisfactorily. Good. And Resident Evil 4 is in my future. I'm excited and scared.
Awesome. It should be in everyone else's future as well. But okay, well, let's talk about something else. I know nothing about Moonscars, Kate, so why don't you enlighten me and the rest of the audience about this delightful game that I assume is somewhat of a 2D Souls-like.
That's exactly what it is. Moonscars is one of the, like, you know, 37,000 2D Souls-like games. But I came across it. What initially got me interested in this game over a lot of other options was that I just loved the art style. I found it really interesting and really unique. So for anyone who's watching on YouTube, we've got just some gameplay going of someone just kind of...
We do. Thank you. Thank you. Credit. Sections. All credit to the Collector's Hubs on YouTube for this footage.
Yeah. So we've got some gameplay going and you can see like it's got a very kind of like, I would say like a painted sort of style.
It's painted really, pixel art. It's kind of cool.
Yeah. Like it's really gorgeous and it's got a really interesting like color scheme. Like I would say like a lot of the areas are kind of like dark, like almost like grayscale. A lot of like really muted colors, but then your main character is dressed like in red, and then whenever you kill an enemy they like they get like a bit of a blood splatter that is also red, and it stands out really striking against the really dark browns. So yeah, this game is gorgeous, and that was the first kind of thing, and then it was on Game Pass and I was like, okay, I gotta check it out. And then I read some reviews, and the reviews are very polarizing. Like, a lot of reviews are like, this game's great, loved it, had a great time. And other reviews are like, this game is terrible. It has a lot of ideas that don't work.
It's always interesting to go into a game when that's kind of the pitch, I find.
Yeah, and that almost intrigued me just as much to try it, because I think... There's a lot of, I wouldn't be unfair to say there's a lot of saturation in this genre now, especially I find with the 2D ones. Like there's a lot of games that are, you know, this kind of Souls inspired, you lose your stuff on death and there's hard boss fights and, you know, you get like to choose which weapon you want and they're kind of like dark fantasy sort of style. And a lot of them end up feeling very similar. But this game, for you know, the faults it may have, I think it does a lot of things that are unique, which I appreciate, because I think, like, it's nice to have something that isn't just going through the same path. It's kind of trying to, like, carve its own identity. And whether or not that works perfectly all of the time, I think I at least respect that they, like, had some creative ideas. And I would be really interested to see, like, a game number two that maybe kind of, like, perfected them a little bit.
So does this game have Metroidvania elements to it then? Or, like, how does the, what's the format?
I would say it's, like, very light Metroidvania. Like, you do kind of go through different areas, and there are definitely, like, some spots where it's like, okay, you have to be able to, like, there's, like, a big dash you get that you can go over gaps, so you can find them, and you don't know how to progress this area, so you've got to go and, like, find somewhere else to go until you get the upgrade, and you can come back and do the dash. So it's got a couple of those. I would say it's very light, though. It's, like, two or maybe three upgrades that you could consider, like, needing to traverse the world. But for the most part, it's kind of just, it's definitely more about the combat than platforming. Although I would say she's quite a satisfying character to move, especially when you get a double dash, because then
Mario Kart double dash, shout out everybody.
Mario Kart double dash. Yeah, you get another character that just kind of follows you around, throws shells at the back.
Punches people from behind.
Punches people, yeah. So the kind of the gimmick of this game is that you start out, you just have a sword, you have, like, a basic attack, and then you have two, like, spell slots is how I would describe them. And the spell slots are what you kind of spend your currency on. So the soul of this game, you could say that you kill monsters and you get spent on, like, buying new spells from a skill tree. So you don't actually do stats. You just keep buying more powerful versions of spells. And it was kind of interesting that you could, like, pick and choose which spells you want to prioritize, like, where you want to go down the tree. Like, I think by the end of the game, I basically had everything. So, like, it's not super extensive, but it was at least, like, a bit of, you know, choice on how you kind of want to approach it. And the spells are neat because they kind of borrow the same sort of ideas like Hollow Knight, in that you have your health bar, and then you have essentially, like, a mana bar. It's not what it's called, but you could call it that. It's called, like, Spite, I think. It's Ichor, sorry. Ichor is the currency. And Ichor is kind of like a life force, I guess is how it would be described. So you can hold down your heal button. You don't have flasks, like is traditional in these games, like a set amount of heals. The bar heals you. So you hold the healing button down, and you kind of have to stand still, and it heals you and drains your Ichor bar. But Ichor
just sounds made up. It heals you and drains your Ichor bar.
It kind of sounds like a protein snack as well. Like, try this Ichor bar.
You guys
want to
go meet,
like,
up at the Ichor bar?
Yeah, peak performance. So that's interesting, but it's kind of like a risk reward, because your Ichor is also how you cast spells. It's the currency. Each spell casts a certain amount. So spells are very powerful, and it's what you're using to, like, upgrade yourself as you go through. But also, if you, like, just go into the start of a fight and pop the bar, then you might not be able to heal for a little bit.
Right. So, but if you're a veteran player, you're very good at the game, you can really be, like, super aggro, then not need to heal and be, like, very offensive.
Yeah. Yeah, you probably could be. And the way that Ichor is refilled is when you hit enemies.
Mm.
So you're really incentivized to be aggressive, but at the same time, like, that's your health resource as well. So it's this really nice balance of, like, you know, you go in, you're fighting a bit, and then you take some damage, you're like, oh fuck, I've got to heal, but, like, you don't have Ichor, so you have to go back in to fight them a bit more to have the capability to heal. So
yeah,
it's the same, it's the exact same system that's in Hollow Knight.
There's something similar we were talking
here
about in Death's Door too, right? Like, you,
Death's Door is also similar,
but it's not your health, though. It's a little bit more forgiving in Death's Door, isn't it? Like, you're
in Death's Door, it's just for the way spells work. It doesn't
that's
have
right, just
the
for spells
sprinkle onto it. It's
yeah,
just
not quite as detrimental to not
yeah,
have those.
But
yeah,
like, I gotta say, like, I love this system. I think it's so neat because it's such a, like, good risk reward. Like, you can be really defensive and always have healing, or you can be aggressive, but then, you know, you're losing a potential resource, but then, you know, you have to keep fighting to get it back. And it also allows you to, like, traverse an area for a long time, like you can always kind of stay topped up on all your resources. You don't have to worry about like, oh, I've only got 2 health pots left, like I better, you know, go back to the safe spot and like refill. You just are constantly like progressing forward until you die.
Mm-hmm.
So I love that system. I think it's fantastic. It also has a really neat lore implication. I don't get too much in the story of these games because it's definitely taking the FromSoft approach of being kind of vague and like, you know, kind of like ethereal of a story. But it's got a really interesting one where like a lot of the beings in this world are actually like clones made of clay. And they're kind of sort of like a hive mind sort of like kind of idea. But then characters are sort of like, you know, gaining some humanity. And then there's the question of like every time they make another clay version of this, they become like the real one, but then the other one's just sort of there as like a husk. And it's like, well, which one really is the person? Like, are they all versions of them? Are they all different? Like it actually has quite an interesting narrative if you choose to engage with it, which I think you definitely don't have to enjoy this game. Like it can just be a fun combat game, but
it's so interesting that that's the story because I was watching Ghost in the Shell last night and that's like very similar to what you were just
saying. Interesting. I haven't seen Ghost in the Shell despite it being like recommended a lot of times, but I should because I'm such a sucker. Any kind of story that like questions like what exactly humanity is and like what makes you human and like, you know, like a Detroit kind of story. Yeah. Like I'm such a massive sucker for that.
I like that stuff too. And you should definitely watch Ghost in the Shell in that case, because that's like, that's like the theme of the show. That's what it's about.
Yeah. I mean, the name that makes sense, Ghost in the Shell, like that's a badass name, by the way.
It is. It's one of the top names for anything of all time.
I completely agree. Like it's got to be a metal band out there somewhere as well. That's dope. But anyway, yeah. So this game, so those are kind of the interesting hooks of it. Then it's got a few, I'll kind of go over the mechanics. I think like if anyone's seen a 2D like action Souls game, like, you know, you've got your attacks, you've got a parry. The parry's very nice in this game, I will say. So big points on that one. It's very clearly displayed what moves you can parry. They have this like red pulse that goes out of them when the move starts. So I really appreciate that because it takes the guesswork out of like, can I parry this move? And then you try and you don't get it. You're like, did I just do it wrong? Or like, does it not work? Where it's so clear, which is good because the game is hard. Like that is the sticking point I would say to not recommend to a lot of people, is the game is pretty difficult and it's pretty punishing when it gets hard. So I think unless you are down to like fight bosses a decent amount of times, it's not really for everybody.
And so like, how did you personally enjoy that level for this game?
I personally liked it. I thought it was like a good level for me personally, but it has an interesting mechanic that does alleviate this potential problem a little bit, in the fact that as you progress through the game and the more things you kill, the moon phase changes and it gets like this to be this like red blood moon. And as the moon gets bloodier, enemies start to deal more damage, but you also start to deal more damage. So fights become very difficult in the sense of like you can only really take 1 or 2 hits and then you're dead, but you're also killing enemies quicker, so you kind of get like a bit of a power fantasy at that stage, but it raises the tension as well. So there were times where I was playing where I was like running through things and I was feeling so good about myself and I was just felt like, you know, like an absolute god, and then I would come across like an encounter and just get my ass absolutely handed to me, and I would go, okay, I'm done at that moon phase now, let's make it go down. So you get an item that resets it back to just regular, and then as you keep going it'll progress up and up and up again, and then you can keep resetting it with this item. And so it worked for me because I, you know, went through the game at a pretty decent pace, but the item is finite is the catch. So if you're not as confident in these types of games, or you're finding it more difficult and you are like dying more and then having that moon cycle kind of like progressing, you could potentially run out of the resource. And I think that would be really awful. Like, I think that should just be something you should be able to do, because it's going to alienate a lot of people who want to play the game, but want to play at the lower moon and don't want to have to deal with it, like, rising.
Yeah, and it's funny because those are the people that are going to run out because they're going to be using it more. Mm-hmm. And so it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy of like...
Yeah. Exactly. So I think if it's like, you know, either it's not optional or it is. And like, this middle ground worked fine for me because I always had the resource available when I wanted it. And I got to be able to choose when it was low versus when it was high. And that, I think, is what they intend for you to do. Like, they want you to try to play it higher and then reset it when it's becoming a bit too overwhelming. But the problem is that if you find the game just difficult in general, which it is, it's not an easy game, you could run out and then be halfway through the game and be like basically fucked because you don't have the ability to reset it. So mm-hmm, I think mm-hmm. it would just be a better game if that option was like, you know, something you could turn on to say like infinite reset.
Sure. Yeah. The moon
phase, yeah. Right. Like, I don't think that hurts anyone. You can still have it be a finite resource if you want the tension, or, you know.
Yeah. It wouldn't really change much. Eh? Hmm.
Exactly. So that's what I would say is probably my biggest complaint of the game. They've got a couple other interesting things they do that I want to shout out just to show how unique this game is. And I think its biggest strength is its world design and the kind of creativity that they're approaching it with. So you've got that moon. You've also got a kind of like people call it a roguelike element, which I guess is interesting. It's called your spite level. So as you kill things, you have a bar that fills up. And when it fills up, you get to open the spite menu, which they just opened. How wonderfully timed. And you get to choose a little perk. So that could be like you heal a little bit more when you're healing. Your like crit chance goes up, like your spells cost a little bit less, like stuff like that. They're small perks, but they add up. And you get to keep accumulating these as you're killing enemies. But when you die, you lose all of your spite perks. And then you have to start like perking up again. Yeah, okay.
So that kind of is like roguelike-y then. So I guess like the longer you live, you get power just for that life within the game. So it's kind of like a roguelike within a game that's not a roguelike. That's
exactly. Cool, actually. It was that's like cool. A roguelike mechanic in a game that is not, because like your progress, you know, like you're still progressing through it. Like, it's not like you're doing runs. You are progressing through like the set levels. But I kind of hit and miss on this. I think this is probably the game's most like contentious mechanic, because on one hand I really like it. Like, it's really fun to be accumulating them as you go, especially when you're just exploring an area. But the downside is that when you're doing a boss, you show up, you've got all your spite things, you fight the boss, you die because the boss is hard and you haven't learned what all their moves are yet, and then you go back up to them and you're like, I have no spite like levels. Like, maybe you get one on the way, because like there's usually a few enemies on your way to the boss from the mirror, which are these game's bonfires. So maybe you get one, but like you're kind of feeling a little bit like weaker than you normally would be because you're used to having accumulated a few. So your options are either keep fighting the boss without any spite, or go and grind and then come back and fight the boss after, which like, to me, that just sounds really tedious. So I ended up just fighting them like at base strength because I didn't want to waste my time.
Yeah. And what are you going to do? Like,
accumulate anymore?
Okay, I've practiced this boss for half an hour. Now I'm feeling I'm going to go for a good run. So I'm going to go grind for some spite for 20 minutes and then challenge the boss and hope I don't die. And then like, you know, yeah, I know what you mean.
Like, it just, I think it's one of those things where like it was a neat idea, and I really love how it works when you're exploring an area, because like you do just build it up, and then if you die, like whatever, there's still so much more of the area to explore. So like you just feel like it's constantly like happening, and it's really nice too because it kind of works with the moon phase. So like, as the moon is rising, you are also getting more spite, so you're also getting stronger to like keep pace with that a little bit. But and then it just kind of all falls apart at the bosses, because it's like, well, I'll just ignore this mechanic. But it sort of feels like it's supposed to be like a choice, like, is it worth it to go, you know, like kill stuff on the way and farm it up? But it's, well, it's not really worth it because it's just tedious, right? Like, it stops being a decision of, is this like a smart strategy, and just becomes, do I want to waste 5 minutes at the start of every boss fight, which the answer is no.
Yeah, this is exactly how I feel about my biggest complaint about the number 11 game on my list, which I beloved and love so much, Bloodborne. Mm-hmm. Why the fuck don't they just start with max blood vials every time? Yes. It's such bullshit that you have to go and farm those. Like, 100%. Oh my god. What a 100%. Nightmare.
Blood vial farming is by far the worst part of Bloodborne. And like, again, it just goes back to the same argument of like, it doesn't make the game more difficult. It just makes it more...
it just wastes your time.
It just either wastes your time or makes it more inaccessible for people who like are gonna die more.
Yeah, like me. Because when I had to go fight the cleric beast for the first time playing the game, it wasn't just run to the cleric beast. It was first farm enough blood vial so I don't die in 2 seconds to the cleric beast and then go fight him to learn his moves to die and then have to farm more blood vial. Like, oh my god.
Yeah.
What a nightmare.
It's something that like in theory seems like it could be an interesting mechanic because like, oh, it adds a level of like tension, but it just makes it tedious. It doesn't work. So
The tension comes from running out of blood vials in a fight, not from having to farm them mundanely in between.
I agree. Anyways, 100%.
We're on a tangent.
I agree. Yeah. Anyway, as someone with a Bloodborne tattoo, I agree. That's a shitty part of Bloodborne.
That's like the only part. It's horrible.
Yeah, everything else, 10 out of 10. Blood vial farming, 0 out of 10. But yeah, I would say Moonscars was a really neat experience. It kind of, it felt really fresh, I think, in a space where I fucking love Soul-like games. So like, I want to play basically all of them. They're all on my list. But it does feel refreshing to get something that has a bit more of a unique identity, or at least is trying out some new ideas. And they don't always work perfectly, but I think for the most part, I enjoyed a lot of the mechanics. And I guess there's one last one I'll just briefly say, like you get like a special attack that you keep getting to choose. And so you've got one where like you do like a big whirlwind and it applies like a damage over time. You've got one where you kind of throw the spear out and it comes back to you and it like slows enemies or something. So they all kind of do something a little bit different, but you keep getting to change them as you go. So I like that for just having a bit of variety. Like I don't typically do like tons of different builds in these kind of games. Like I kind of just do the same thing every game because I like what I like, but having a little bit of like, you know, every like 40 minutes or so I got to choose a different ability to use was kind of fun. It just kept it a little bit more varied, and it was like, oh cool, like I've never tried the big axe out, I'll try the big axe, which normally in a game I would never try the big axe because it sounds big and slow. And then I got it and I was like, I don't like it. But I was glad I tried it. But yeah, I would say if you like these like games and you're down for something that's going to be a bit more demanding of a challenge, but actually has a really interesting story and just is a little bit different, I 100% recommend Moonscars. If you like the genre but are not the biggest fan of it and think that you might, you know, not have the patience for something a little bit more abrasive, I would say maybe no, but at least Google the game just to see how pretty it is. And then you don't have to buy it. It's also on Game Pass, so, you know.
Yeah, check it out on Game Pass. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
That's awesome. You know, okay, first of all, one thing. Sorry if anyone can hear the piano going on my side. My upstairs neighbor is playing the piano. She is a very good pianist, but not exactly the greatest for podcasting, mm-hmm. so apologies there. Well,
I can't hear the piano, so hopefully that means everyone else can't. But also, if everyone can and I can't, I feel a little left out because her piano is lovely.
That's right, yeah. The other thing I was going to say was I'm really glad every time we talk about one of these games, I'm usually quite fascinated to hear you break it apart because on face value, they all look so similar to me. You know, just like what I'm looking mm-hmm. at here, I couldn't have told you these intricacies, but I do think the pixel art is pretty cool on this one. Mm-hmm. For the character, I don't know about the environment, to be totally honest. It's just so dark and like you can't really see a lot. I don't know, but this is just this environment too.
I will say that I think the quality on YouTube isn't as nice as actually playing it, so I think when you play it, it is not quite so dark. And it's just gorgeous. Like there's one area in particular where it actually is kind of black and white and everything just like pops. It's lovely.
Awesome. All right, well, let's change gears a little bit here, and let's talk about Nintendo Indie World, which happened a couple of days ago, and there was a ton of different announcements from lovely, you know, Nintendo Indie publishers, and we're just going to talk about some of our favorite stuff from the show, because there was quite a lot of stuff announced. I've got a little video of it playing here. We'll just have it in the background. So where do you want to start, Kate? Like, what stuck out to you here? How'd you enjoy the show?
I mean, I loved it. I don't think I can ever watch a like indie showcase and not love it. Like, I can't say there's like tons of games for me, but I just think it's like delightful to watch all these kind of like cute and creative games come out. I guess if I wanted to shout one out, I mean, I got it. Like, I'll just go for like the low hanging fruit for me. Like, Blasphemous 2 is coming out. Like, as I just talked about at length, it's another 2D Souls-like game. I haven't actually played the first Blasphemous, but it's one on the list. And so I think maybe with a sequel that I definitely want to check the first one out. And I've heard really good things. So exciting to get a follow-up game.
Yeah, for sure. I think the number one for me, and you know what's funny is like this is, I agree, like this indie world is definitely one where I wouldn't say there's anything that's like, wow, I have to get this. A lot of times there's usually at least one or two indies where I'm like, wow, this is really awesome. I was really hoping to see Plucky Squire, to be honest. Like, that's what was.
Oh my god. That game looks so fucking good. Yeah. I want to play Plucky Squire so bad.
Same here. That's like, oh man, yeah. We'll have to do an episode to talk about our you know, most anticipated for the rest of the year or something. We've been on a lot of sidetracks this episode. This has been good. This has been a good episode. What I was going to say, my thing that stood out to me was Crime O'Clock, coming out later in June this year.
Yes.
Now this game, it instantly stuck out because of the visuals. It looks like Where's Waldo? Like I guess you're a detective and you're kind of piecing together what happened, but it seemed to me like my impression was you're kind of looking around in these like really Where's Waldo, like complicated zoomed out, really hustle and bustle filled in pictures, and you're like seeing where crimes happened. But then the cool thing is that you're flipping through time as well, and like different things are happening in different times, and as you uncover what happened in one time, it'll affect like something in the future, in the past. I just love the presentation. I love like the black and white with the really vibrant colors. Who knows if it's going to be any good, but it definitely stuck out to me as something I would love to try.
Yeah,
or love to look into
100%. I think this looks really neat. I think it really comes down to like, yeah, like you said, the execution, but I think the idea is fantastic. The presentation looks good. Like, it's definitely a game to keep my eye on for sure. Another game I want to shout out is actually Oxenfree 2, The Lost Signal.
Did you play the first one?
I did play the first one.
Because I played the first one too.
Okay, so yeah. I played Oxenfree. I bought it on my Switch. I was homesick one day. I was really sick. I was at home. I had to stay home from work. And I was like wanting to play a game, but I was like, oh, all these games I have are like, they're too much effort. Like, I just can't be bothered. And so I ended up just like on a whim buying Oxenfree from the Nintendo eShop. And I really enjoyed it, like more than I thought I was going to. Like, it's kind of a neat like paranormal story, but it plays with time in a really interesting way, and like there's almost parts of the game where you get stuck in a time loop, and it has like, you know, the characters are just sort of endearing as well. Like, I ended up buying into the relationship of like the young girl who's there with like a friend, and you know, they're kind of in that like growing up process of like moving away or like what they're gonna do with the rest of their lives. So they're sort of just like a really grounded story going on at the same time as you're getting like creepy, paranormal, haunted.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting that you feel that way. For me, Oxenfree, like everything you're saying about it is true, and that is the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason, it didn't land with me the same way. Like, I felt like I got lost a few times, and I found myself kind of wandering the island, and it just kind of took me out of it a bit. And I think the other thing was I took a bit of a break in between when I was playing it, so I maybe wasn't as familiar with the story, which isn't the game's fault. That's my fault. But I know like the game is really well received by most people, I think. So I'm glad you're excited for the second one.
I mean, I liked it. Like, I feel like it's a game I wouldn't normally like necessarily go for, but whatever it was, like, I mean, it was a combination of when I played it. Like, I think I went through it like in like 2 days, like being home from sick, just like played like a lot during one day, like went to bed, like got up, still felt like shit. Was like, all right, I'm gonna finish Oxenfree. So I mean, I think 2 looks good. I'm interested in playing it. Like, I might just, you know, wait for a rainy day, like the next time I get sick. I'll buy it. Kind of keep the Oxenfree tradition
going. Hey, you know, Night School Studios, the studio that makes that, is a Netflix studio. So there's potential we might get that game on the Netflix app for free.
That would be neat. It would also make a really good show, I think, if Netflix wanted to take it down that avenue. Yeah, it would.
They could totally like Stranger Things it up and
have some kids 100%. On an island or something. It has a really Stranger Thing vibe. That's a good comparison to make.
Okay, so the game I want to talk about, and like cross your fingers, everybody, because this is really like, this is a 0 out of 10 game, or it could be like a 10 out of 10 fun time. This is played up. This is basically overcooked, but you're running the whole restaurant. Yeah. I mean, who knows? Because this game, like, it could just be total garbage. Like, some of these games just end up not being good at all. But if this thing is executed well and it's really overcooked, but you're also serving people, like, we have to play this game. And it's a roguelike. And you're like, as you're going, you're like serving and unlocking things. I can just envision it now. Like, it's you, it's me, it's two other friends. It's like, okay, Kate, you're running the kitchen. I'm running the front of house. And then someone's over here doing the dishes. Someone's here. Oh, what upgrade are we taking? Oh, we're buying new ovens for our fridge, or ovens for our kitchen, because we're going to, like, you know, it would just be so much fun to play that. I think we'd have a blast if it
ends up 100%. Like, you cannot get the elephant in the room comparison. Like, this is just overcooked, but they've, like, changed the format, which, like, I guess that's kind of shitty in but some ways, but in other ways it's like, that's what I want.
Yeah, overcooked as a roguelike is genius, as long as it's got like interesting things to unlock and whatnot, you know?
Yeah, it reminds me of like if you took Overcooked and like Diner Dash and put them together, and like
this and made it multiplayer.
Really want to play Diner Dash, which is like a game I have not thought about in many years.
Shout out to like, Diner Dash.
Shout out to Diner Dash in the days I used to download the free trial, like 20 times in a row to play, like, for an evening.
It was that an Insane Aquarium. We never had the full versions. Right. We just played the demos over and over for hours.
I fucking loved that game. Like, I want to see a revival of that. But, like, yeah, Played Up, which is a great name for it, looks like it could be phenomenal. And at the very least, like, I feel like even if it's not good, like, it's one night of, like, having some drinks and having fun regardless.
It just can't be bad. So. It just can't be bad. Yeah. That's all. That's all.
Yeah. That's a neat pick. I want to shout out just very briefly Cult of the Lamb getting an update. It's got some, like, different variations of bosses, maybe in, like, a Hades kind of way. And it's got like some new areas and like new stuff to do at your camp. And it's just got what seems to be like a relatively like decent upgrade. And I remember looking at thinking like, oh, this is all cool stuff, but like, it doesn't sound like a paid DLC. So I really hope they don't charge you for it. And then of course it was a free DLC, like a free update. So just shout out to them. Like, I think that's such a good sign from a developer when they're putting out like free updates to a game that like seemed like it was finished in the first place. And I haven't played Calls of the Lamb. It's been on my list for a while. I thought it looked really neat. And this just makes me, like, you know, want to play it even more. So to Calls of the Lamb and putting out free DLCs, because, like, you definitely could have charged $15 for that and you didn't. So tons of respect.
Yeah. You know, it's so funny. Calls of the Lamb, I almost bought it the other day. It's on sale on the Switch right now. It's only $18. And we'll now get this DLC. So if you want to get it, you know, it'd be fun. Maybe both of us could get it. We could talk about it.
Yeah, it does seem like a good Switch game.
Yeah. Speaking of, well, it also used to run like shit on the Switch. Apparently it was updated now and it's actually like fine. So that's
okay.
Speaking of games that give out free DLC, like it's just Christmas every day and they always give out tons of DLC for free. It's Yacht Club and Shovel Knight Pocket Dungeon. The game that just keeps on giving. Shovel Knight just keeps on giving in general, but free DLC for Pocket Dungeon. Now, Pocket Dungeon I have not played, and I feel like that's really sinful because of how much I love, you know, Shovel Knight regular. But Pocket Dungeon, for what to its credit, looks like an excellent puzzle game. You know, it's got like so much going for it in terms of like the Shovel Knight flavor on what those type of like puzzle games can be. I think that the fact that it's called Pocket Dungeon is not great for it because it's not a mobile game. Like,
it really does sound like a mobile game, doesn't it?
I don't know if it's on mobile, like it might be, and there's nothing wrong with it if it is, but like, this is a Switch game and like it's on your PS4 and like this is not a mobile first game, and I feel like that's like not good. I just want to say that, but like, there's just so much content in here, right? Like, you're playing a Shovel Knight, there's like two new characters, there's different like things you pick up, there's equipment. Like, this is like, why is this game even going as hard as it does? Like, it's just a matching game, you know, but it's like just the level of quality they put into this franchise is unbelievable. And it's like, it's a matter of if not when I play Pocket Dungeon, but it's definitely like moving up because of getting this DLC, right? Like, it's just added value that's coming in for free, like you said.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm surprised it took you this long to mention that. I was like, oh, there's I know.
It's just because I haven't played Pocket Dungeon, you know?
Yeah, so. Exactly. But hey, it seems like the best time to get into it. I think there's one other thing I had on mind to mention, and this one's interesting because, like, I don't know how much, like, the trailer for the game really interests me, but, like, I just got to shout out Animal Well, like,
Yeah, okay. Donkey showed up.
It is, yeah, so Donkey was here, which is crazy. It's, I'm blanking on what his studio is called. Big Mode Games. Big Mode, that's yeah. It. So he made Big Mode, and this is, like, the first game being published by Big Mode, which is Animal Well. And it looks like a really
Speaking of Donkey, he's going to show up on the TV right
now. He's going to fall in that river real quick. it's just, like, such an awkward trailer. And, like, but it's kind of neat. It looks like a really strange, like, surreal, kind of, like, creepy, like, puzzle platforming game. It looks like there's a lot of, like, player agency. Like, what you talked about earlier in Resident Evil, like, pulling the boulder. Like, I feel like that is, like, the whole, like, philosophy behind this game is, like, there's so going to be a lot of ways to interact with things, and I think, like, it's hard to convey that kind of a game in a trailer because you can only really show, like, clips of, like, someone doing something, but you can't really show a clip of, like, here are all the, you know, 20 options that they could have interacted with this scenario, and they chose to, you know, like, do it this way. So I think, like, this game is such a question mark, but because it's a question mark, I think it's interesting. And then also, like, the pedigree of having Donkey behind it, like, he's never published a game before. Like, to my knowledge, he's not, like, made games. He's not a game developer. But from what I've seen of his channel, like, yeah, there's just some, like, funny, you know, dumb jokey videos. But he's also done some what I think are really interesting breakdowns of games on his channel, and I think he's actually got a really creative mind for it, and I think the things he looks for are, like, really unique experiences that kind of push the envelope of, like, how mechanics can interact with a game and, like, change how you approach something. So all of that packaged up into, like, a weird as fuck looking game like Animal Well, like, I'm really curious about it. Like, it strikes me as almost like doing, like, what Undertale did and just kind of, like, blowing people away in a sense. So it's got a lot of potential.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say about the game is, like, Animal Well itself, very dramatic piano music going on here now. For those who can hear, sounds like there's a train that's about to, like, run off a track. You know, that's what's kind of going on.
Oh no, Spider-Man!
Animal Well, like, yeah. To me, the game isn't what's fascinating. It's how does it do as Donkey's first publishing deal? Just because, like, you know, as a very notable person that critiques and talks about games online, what would happen if he, like, published a flop? You know. Or, like, something to that effect. I don't think that'll be the case. Like, and, you know, he probably doesn't even have that much involvement in the game being made itself. He's publishing, right? Like, if he knows what he's looking for, like, that's a very interesting thing because there's not been a lot of people, like, of his... Maybe I'm talking to my ass here a little bit, but it seems like there's not a lot of people coming from, like, where his background that are, like, now just, like, all of a sudden publishing and, like, able to bring games from his perspective to the forefront. Like, yeah. It's a very unique position. So I hope it's successful because I agree, like, when he's being critical and, like, you know, not doing the joke stuff, like, I agree with a lot of what he says. So it'll be cool to see, like, if he's selected the right game to show off, like, something he's proud of for the first one.
Yeah. Cool. And like you said, it'll be interesting too to see if, like, this becomes more of a thing, like, if more platforms and, like, people who are just kind of, like, voices in the industry end up taking, like, a very, like, active role within the industry. Like, it reminds me of, like, when I watch, like, I still watch League of Legends. Don't crucify me. I don't play it. I swear. I just watch it. but, like, I've noticed over the years of, like, watching it while I work out, like, a lot of players have taken roles of, like, being coaches or they become, like, you know, like, the color, like, analysts, like, during the game, and, like, they're commentating, and, like, people are moving around in the space, and it's because it's, like, a relatively new, like, play, like, area to work in, right? So, like, it's kind of, like, evolving and changing as, like, people get into it and start, like, doing different positions. So, like, this kind of strikes me as the same kind of vein of, like, someone who's, like, in the industry in a sense, but they're, like, now, like, taking a different niche. So it'd be kind of neat if, like, a lot of, like, you know, these, like, kind of small publishers pop up of people are voices already, and, like, instead of just critiquing or analyzing or, like, you know, giving commentary, they're now, like,
you know,
fulfilling that extra step role.
It's kind of surprising to me that it hasn't I mean, it probably has happened, but like it hasn't happened to like our in our periphery to this point. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. It's interesting, too, because I think there's a lot of people that think they know a lot of stuff about games that really would like completely fail because like the way the industry works is so different to what people would expect. Like you and I, like we could probably run a publisher, right? But like there's so many things we wouldn't have thought about. Like it's got to be tough. So like I'm sure Dunkey's equipped. Like obviously he's huge and has a lot of resources, but yeah, cool to see. Very quickly, little to the left, how have we not talked about this game before after playing Unpacking, Kate? I mean, yes. this is a game about organizing shit in cupboards and in drawers, and they all have nice little places that they fit properly and you're like putting things in. I've never seen this come across my view, but I'm definitely going to look at this now because this thing is like, this is therapy in a game. I need to play.
Yeah, so this I think is a DLC, the Little on the Left.
Yes, which
is
a
game that's already out.
Yeah, I think it's free DLC as well. Is it?
I'm not sure. Maybe it's I have the feeling this one was paid, but I imagine it's relatively cheap. But yeah, this game just looks cute. Like, I don't know if there's a narrative aspect to it, like Unpacking had.
Yeah.
But it's just like really beautiful art, and you just put stuff away, and like, okay, I'm looking at my kitchen, and it's like I could go put that stuff away, but that's not like satisfying. That's not going to de-stress me. But putting stuff away in a really beautifully painted kitchen, like I don't know why that's better.
And like they're putting things in those little boxes, and then you put something in the right spot, and a little thing pops out the other side, and there's more spots for other little things.
And I think the gimmick to this game too is that there's like cats in the house. Like occasionally a cat just like walks over, and they're like, oh, well, let me help you. Like, you know, they like walk over the table you're putting stuff away on. Like it's just so incredibly cute. Like if any idiot ever tells you video games are problematic and they cause violence, show them a Little on the Left. Like who could not enjoy this? Like it's just so pleasant.
Amen.
I love it.
And with that, we'll move on to another pleasant segment that we like to do here on the show, and that's called Listener Mail, everybody. If you want to be cool and write in to ask us a question for the next show, you can do so. And we would love if you did that to cloudcontrolpod. It's proton.me. Or, of course, you can get in touch with us on Twitter as well if you'd rather ask your question there. But we answer a question every single show. And today we have a great question from Jay, who wrote in. And I think, Kate, you've got it open, right? Yeah.
I do, yeah. So Jay's asked, so obviously we know the N64 Nintendo Online has been out recently to great success. James, you've been playing some Pokemon Stadium.
I did.
We had a pretty epic showdown the other day. it came down to what? Nidoran female versus my Rattata?
Yeah, it was an epic showdown.
So, it's an epic battle. But anyway, he's asked, what are the next three games you hope get announced for the N64 on Nintendo Online? So it's already got a pretty stacked like library of games. Like it's not massive, but every single game on there is like really high quality or like would definitely be on the top of someone's list, I feel.
100%. And you know, after looking up a list of like, you know, top N64 games to make my mind, you know, go and where I wanted to take this question, there really isn't a lot of like, wow, those are amazing games left that need to come to this system, I don't think. You know, like they really, looking back, it doesn't have like a huge selection of like must-haves, in my opinion.
I don't know.
But I got some good ones, though. Big
hitters that actually are missing.
Well, what are they then? Why don't you tell me?
All right. Well, so the problem is I've actually come up with five games I really want to be on there. So I'll give you my three and maybe two honorable mentions. But yeah. I just have to shout out, the game I would have put on here but was shocked to find out is actually already there is Pokemon Puzzle League.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we had that game and it was fun. It was basically just like Tetris, but like the blocks were like Pokemon.
Yeah, it's like Bejeweled more so. Like you're switching the places of things.
Yeah, maybe it was more like Bejeweled, but it was like they were like the Pokemon elements, and if you got in a fire, like a fire Pokemon would like attack the enemy or something. It was like a versus, like it was just like it probably wasn't good, but I remember it being really fun, and I was shocked that it made it on the list of games on the N64. So the games that I want, maybe let's go back. Do you want to go back and forth?
Yeah, let's go back.
Because we might have some overlap.
Let's go back and forth. I'll say my two honorable mentions first, if that's cool with you.
Okay.
Number one is going to be, what's it called? Snowboard Kids. Because I have a different racing game on here, and I just couldn't put Snowboard Kids. on there.
God, okay, I have I have the exact same thing. Snowboard Kids was actually the first game I wrote down and thought of, because like it probably, I have no idea if it's good, but I remember renting it a few times and it was fun, and like you just played as like random kids like snowboarding.
Yeah, it was, I mean, who knows if it was any good, like you said, right? And the other one I wanted to shout out was Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2, just for you. And just because I've actually never really played it to completion, and I think it's good from what I've seen, but I would like to play it one day just to, you know, go through and see why it's so renowned as one of the best games of all time.
Wow.
That's all.
Shockingly, I don't have that on my list. And I really hope they don't put that trash on the online system that I don't even pay for. No, I'm just kidding. That's certainly fun. My other honorable mention is Diddy Kong Racing. I put it with Snowboard Kids. It's like two good racing games. Diddy Kong had like the cool story mode I remember being really fun. And obviously like the best level was the one where you flew around in volcano and like carried the eggs.
Yeah, that was fun.
Like that was the best part of the game, and I'll fight anyone on that.
I totally agree. Totally agree. Okay, that's all your
those are honorable mentions. Okay. Yeah.
So the first game, then, this will lead me into my first one. My first one is Diddy Kong Racing, and I think that's a great kart racer. And I, you know what I'm so cool about it? I just remember being in the plane, like being able to choose the plane or the kart or the hovercraft, and thinking like, after being such a Mario Kart fan before that, being like, wow, this is so cool having three vehicles. Like, this is a total game changer. And like doing the story mode was so fun, going around that hub world and like figuring out how to, you know, get behind the waterfall and all this stuff. I just thought that was a great experience. Who knows if it's still fun now? Mario Kart's probably better, but fun game.
I would say Mario Kart's like a better franchise overall, but for the N64 entries, I would say Diddy Kong kicks Mario Kart's ass for the N64.
I think for sure. Like,
there's so much more to do. There's the area. Like, I even think like when you get items, you can like use them right away, or you can keep going to get another item to like upgrade them. So like there's an element of strategy that Mario doesn't have. Like, it was like, I would love to see this come out as like a new 2024, like, you know, reimagining
the story. The single player story mode is really what sets it apart. Like, if it's way beyond what Mario had.
Right. There was like boss races and stuff. Like, it was really cool.
Yeah. So, like CTR as well. Honestly, CTR, same thing.
Yeah.
It's really Mario Kart that lacks.
Okay. So that is probably the correct answer, but I went the chaos route. And for my racing game, I said I want Iggy's Wrecking Balls.
I picked Iggy's Wrecking Balls too. It's my third game.
Yes. Okay. So this game, it's honestly more out of curiosity, because like I was racking my brain for like, what N64 games did we play? And then this, I got reminded of this, like, it's some kind of like Lovecraftian horror racing game. Like, you were like these weird balls, but they all had like faces, and like one was a dinosaur. I want to say one was like a clown. Like, it was kind of repulsive to look at, to be honest.
Yeah, they're weird. I'm gonna bring up a video for those watching on video.
And that
right
guy
now
was just teeth. He's
just teeth. Oh my god, Charlie, he's a clown.
Like, it's so incredibly ugly. But the weird thing was, is like, you'd race, but like, you use like all the, they had like all had mouths and like tongues, and you'd use like the tongue to like grapple on stuff. So like a lot of the races would be like actually like going up a tower or something, because you'd be like grappling up to platforms, and like, it was just so weird. And well, I think it's probably the worst racing game we've talked about so far. It's the one I want to replay the most, because like, it's so weird and I want to remember exactly what it was like.
Yeah, you know, the more we're watching at this video now, I don't think it was good. But
no,
looks,
I almost guarantee it was bad. But like, you could get pretty good momentum with like grappling up the stuff, like. And like, I feel like the swinging was not easy. Like, you had to get okay at it.
Yeah, I mean, I would love to try this too. We should try this sometime. Yeah. Iggy's Wrecking like, Ball, folks.
It's not because it's a good game. It's because it would be the most interested to go back and revisit it than the other games.
Yeah, no, I'm with you too. But I picked it the same reason. I just remember that we rented it so often. Like, I remember we would always go to Blockbuster and rent a game, you know, once or a month or whatever. And this was like, probably like three or four times at least we had rented this, like, to the point where we probably should have just bought it at some point, but never did. I think it was like hard to find. Like, I don't know. I'd never known anyone else has owned this game. Like, it's just one of those weird ones that was on the rental shelf and we just kind of played it. Who knows? The other game I had on my list that we've not talked about yet was Star Wars Pod Racer. That was an N64 game. I think we actually had it on the computer out of like some like PC thing or something. Yeah, but this was an N64 game. And, you know, it's weird that I went with three racing games, but the N64, yeah, I guess, was good for that. I remember Pod Racer just being so fun. And like the thing I liked about it the most was that you got to see like your engines and their like health meters. And I thought that was so cool back in the day, because you'd crash in Mario Kart and it doesn't matter. But Pod Racer, you'd have like, oh shit, my left engine is like on fire and breaking. Like I can't crash on the left because it's going to break. So now I have to drive like really cautiously and like protect that side. It's just kind of a cool wrinkle. I mean, I can't remember the characters. I think Sebulba is one of them. I like his name, so I remember him being cool. So yeah, that was fun. I mean, it was a hard game from what I remember. I know there was like like that ice level at some point. You had to go over a jump and it was so hard to like line your Pod Racer up. But then again, why does it matter if you're on ice, like you're hovering? It really doesn't make any sense.
There were a couple levels that had jumps. It was definitely one of the more difficult games. I think I read something about it, about how like unbalanced it was with like, because you choose your racer and then you choose like the pod racer. Yeah, is it called a pod racer?
Or is it the racer's pod? Is the pod racer
the racer's pod?
Is the pod racer the racer or the vehicle?
Star Wars nerds, help us out.
I don't know.
So you choose your vehicle for locomotion, and you choose your pilot of the vehicle. It's two separate things, if I remember correctly.
No. I think they come together. I think they all have their own. I'm almost 100%
sure.
Story
mode, you had to use it, but then in like the regular races, you could like mix and match, I want to say. But I'm pretty sure I read something that somewhere like is so objectively worse that like there's a level where like it has a big jump and some characters and like their pods just legitimately can't make it over that jump. Like it's physically impossible for them because they have like crappier stats than other racers. And I don't know if that's true. I just remember reading that on the internet somewhere, and like it's totally the kind of game where you could see that like being legitimate.
That makes me feel a lot better, because I remember not making the jump often. So it's I would just like to think that my favorite character was slow.
Like I'm pretty sure it's like the shark guy. Like I think there's like a shark alien and he cannot make that jump.
Awesome.
So I mean, obviously Anakin can, like he's the best 10-year-old ever, but like it's a hard jump.
That's all my games too, I got for this. This is great. I'd like all these games to come to N64.
I agree with your list. I've got two other games that we haven't talked about that are on my list, because I only had Iggy's as the double up. I put Smash, the OG, like, Smash
Yeah, that's
Bros.
Not on there. That's true.
It's not on there. And I mean, I think Smash Ultimate, like, is the pinnacle Smash game. Like, I think that, like if I want to play Smash, like, Smash Ultimate is obviously, like, the best choice. But I think it would be fun to go back and have a night or two of, like, reliving the old game. Because we played that so much. Like our N64 was like a Smash console, like largely, like we played so much. Like the levels are so nostalgic, and like all the old characters, and
yeah,
like,
love
some of them
too.
Really haven't changed much, but I would love to go back and like see what it feels like. And then the last game I put on here is a game I legitimately just want to play, like not just out of curiosity, but the like original like Banjo game
The
N64. Like that is such a highly acclaimed, like he came to Smash, it's such a highly acclaimed series, and the N64 one is supposed to be like the like golden one, and so I've never played it, and if it was on the Switch online and I could, you know, I had access to it, and in a fantasy world we were allowed to buy a month and not have to subscribe the whole year, I would just be interested to go back and try like such a highly acclaimed game.
Is that not on Game Pass? There's a bunch of Banjo stuff on Game Pass, and Banjo's owned by Rare.
That is true.
There's a bunch of Banjo stuff on Game Pass. I don't know if they have that one, but there is a lot.
I feel like it'd be weird to have the N64 one on Game Pass, but I hope.
I mean, yeah, but it could be part of a collection though, because there's
stalling to go look at it up right now. I've got it open. Right. There are no search results found for Banjo, but you know what? I wonder, it might be a console only. I have PC Game Pass.
Yeah, it could be. We'll look
and
into
so
it.
So
Mm-hmm. I'll have to do some research. Anyway, great episode.
He's a pretty bear. So.
Yeah. Are you more of a banjo or a kazooie fan?
Because I like kazooie. I'm all about kazooie. Yeah.
Banjo's kind of weird. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. Isn't he like kind of the dumb one, right? In kazooie.
I mean,
like
I assume he's dumb because that's got the way it's got to work. I don't know. Seems it's like the just, trope, yeah. right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Our bias is always correct. So the band is an absolute himbo.
Exactly. Oh, man. That's the quote you come to this podcast for, everybody. Banjo is an absolute himbo. Banjo's a
himbo. And Kazooie's like, I don't know. Maybe, I think Kazooie's like rude or something. Like, they're kind of yeah, like a weird duo, like if I remember correctly.
Yeah. I don't know. folks, this has been a podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. You've stuck through it all the way here. I think this has been a great show. We've talked about some good stuff. I'm giving you some excellent N64 recommendations, not only if they come to N64, but also if you want to look up some kind of emulation thing. I'm not going to stop you, so go look at these great games. Play some Mickey's Wrecking Balls and enjoy yourself. ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls and everything in between, this has been Cloud Control. And we'll be back next week. So remember, this is the gaming podcast. It's not just good, it's good enough. And we'll see you on the next episode.